Welcome in Upstate. It is a Tuesday edition of Straight Up with Sturge, live in the studio with Diesel. Had to do an audible about an hour ago, but we're going to take you up till 6:30 tonight when we give way to Clemson Tiger basketball as Don Munson and Tim Bure will be on the call. It's the St. Peter's Peacocks at the Clemson Tigers from Little John Coliseum. A 7 p.m. tip-off. St. Peter's comes into the game 2-5 on the season. The Tigers are the opposite. They're 5-2. And probably just seeing somebody come up on the schedule, not from the state of Nebraska, because Diesel, Clemson's lost two consecutive to two Nebraska teams. Probably a good thing tonight.
So you're saying it's going to be a close game?
No, I'm not. I am saying that Clemson should handle their business. Now, listen, there's no shame in losing to Creighton and Nebraska. Both of them are top 25 programs. But sometimes you don't want to see Drake or anybody, Nebraska, Omaha, or anybody else come up on the schedule this year. Every once in a while, just seed. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, we're going to get into the Ohio State situation later on, Diesel. But, you know, Urban Meyer announces his retirement today, at least his retirement from Ohio State.
You called it.
But pick and choose your battles. Right now, if I'm an Ohio State fan, I'm not talking any smack to Clemson and South Carolina based on the fact you've never beaten them. You're 0-5 against Clemson and South Carolina, you know? So no harm in admitting right now, Nebraska, when it comes to basketball, you are the man when it comes to Clemson. Also tonight, up at Elon, the Furman Paladins look to – hold on. We've never had the opportunity to do this. The number 25 ranked Furman Paladins, 8-0 on the season. They're at the Elon Phoenix, 3-5. That's a former Southern Conference team. And of course, Bob Ritchie, we had on the show yesterday. Every game Furman tacks on to this winning streak is a record setter for the Furman Paladins. And how cool is that to see Furman University, a Southern Conference team, Diesel, ranked number 25 in the polls. I mean, it's been a long, long time. The task is much taller for our friends up in Spartanburg, for the Wofford Terriers. Tonight, they are 5-2. You know, they won last week on the road at South Carolina, but they're at the Kansas Jayhawks tonight. So one of those storied traditions in college basketball, playing at Fog Allen Fieldhouse there in Lawrence, Kansas. Listen, the experience, regardless of the outcome of the game, the experience is absolutely next level for the guys like Fletcher McGee and all those guys as they wrap up their Wofford career this year, getting to play in places like Chapel Hill as they did last year or this year out at Kansas. So pretty cool night here in the state of South Carolina for basketball. The Gamecocks are off till tomorrow night. They are on the road at 9 p.m., a tip-off out at the University of Wyoming. And, of course, one of the things you have to worry about when you play the Cowboys out in Laramie is that the height, you know, how far you are up in the mountains up there. And, of course, you're going to have to play extra players, and that's going to probably hurt South Carolina and the fact that it's been a tough start for the Gamecocks so far. All right, here's the deal. We've got two guests before we get off at 6:30. We're going to talk South Carolina football, maybe wrap up the regular season, if you will, with David Cloninger, the Charleston Post and Courier. That's the top of the 5 p.m. hour. And then we'll get the Clemson perspective on things at 6 p.m. with Gary McDaniel from Clemson Sports News. So those will be your two interviews today. We got a lot of college football, your thoughts on Urban Meyer, because as he said, he's retiring from Ohio State. They asked if he was retiring from coaching, and his comment was, "That's a complicated question." So no, that means he will wait for that Notre Dame job to open at some point. Also, we'll talk about there's a lot of there's a lot of condemnation, if you will, that the college football playoff is already getting stale in year number 5. We'll let you know about that and why the thinking is on that as well. And then the Heisman vote, Diesel. I mean, you think about it. A month ago, Tua Tagovailoa, the Alabama quarterback, was a minus 1,000 betting favorite for the Heisman Trophy. Today, Bovada switched those odds out, and Kyler Murray is now a minus 172 favorite. So here's the thing. Quit giving Heisman trophies away in September, middle of October, things like that. Let them at least play the regular season out before you give it out. Now, I think the Heisman Trophy, I will never say it's not a garbage award, but it's not a pertinent award. It is a regular season award. Because you can't give an award for college football's best player in 2018 unless you take into consideration what happens in the postseason. By that, I really mean what happens in the college football playoffs. Because the most valuable player, if you will, the best college football player, or let's be honest, the best offensive player, probably is going to have his team in the college football playoffs. So you can give the award away in December. Until you start taking in the most important time of the college football season now in 2018, it's just a regular season award. But quit giving out it's September. It's Tua Tagovailoa's and everybody else behind him, because that is the reason they play the schedule.
Well, they talk about Heisman moments all the time. They're looking for Heisman moments. Big players doing big things in big situations. And it doesn't get any bigger than the playoffs, so why would you automatically exclude the playoff? It doesn't make any sense.
I go back and look at Lamar Jackson from Louisville winning a couple of years ago and don't have any issue with it, because now you see how good of a player Lamar Jackson was. Oh, God, I'm sorry. Bring up Louisville today. We were not going to do that. Sorry. But getting back to that point, I have no problem with him getting the award through December, but there's not a snowball's chance in you know where if they take the college football playoff into consideration that Deshaun Watson is not your Heisman Trophy winner a couple of years ago. So call it what it is, but the shame of it is people started writing this thing off at the end of September and end of October. And listen, it's not fair to Kyler Murray. It's not fair to Haskins, the other two finalists that will be there in New York. But I guess it's what we do right now. I mean, can you sit here and say that that college football team in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, about the beginning of October, they're talking that's the greatest college football team that's ever existed? Boy, you haven't heard that here in the last couple of days after Bama was stressed to the edge against Georgia on Saturday. So that's one thing, I guess, with Twitter and social media we'll never get away from, Diesel, but we proclaim these champions and these winners way too early, and it already puts them up there against other people. I just don't think it's fair. So but life's not fair either. A couple other news and notes before we get out. We'll open up the phone lines here in the second segment. Number two, Clemson swept the AP's ACC top honors. ACC Offensive Player of the Year was Travis Etienne. ACC Defensive Player of the Year, according to the Associated Press, was Cleland Farrell. Offensive tackle Mitch Hyatt, defensive tackle Christian Wilkins were also unanimous selections to the All-ACC team. Dexter Lawrence landed on the first team as well. All right, when it comes to quarterback Trevor Lawrence, he was named the AP ACC Newcomer of the Year, and Dabo Swinney was named ACC Coach of the Year by the AP, along with Dino Babers from Syracuse. And then Clemson offense led the way with the second team selections. Another ended up being 11 Clemson Tigers on the AP All-ACC team today. South Carolina lands three players in All-SEC selections. Of course, Debo Samuel was the first team all-purpose and kick returner, second team wide receiver Zach Bailey, the offensive lineman from Somerville, who will miss the Belt Bowl due to injury. He was the second team all-SEC offensive lineman, and Joseph Charlton, the punter, he was the second team punter when it comes to the South Carolina Gamecocks. So we know it's a team sport, but congratulations to those individual award winners right there. So, Diesel, anybody could have seen that Urban Meyer wasn't going to be the coach next year. I'm going to go on a ledge here, because we may, before we get off the air at 6:30, see the announcement of former Clemson quarterback Kelly Bryant, where he's going to go transfer and play football for, come down before we get off the air at 6:30. It's Auburn. All right. Jarrett Stidham, the Auburn offense, the Auburn quarterback who could have come back for one more year, the Baylor transfer, announced earlier today that he is going to go ahead and head to the NFL. No announcement if he's going to play in their Music City Bowl matchup, but he's gone. Well, we had heard Kelly Bryant was making his decision today. He had a last-minute meeting with Gus Malzahn earlier today. I am going to go ahead and say that probably cemented the deal that we will see Kelly Bryant announce that he will play football in 2019 for the Auburn Tigers. The other option from what I hear is Missouri. And if I could stay this close and play at Auburn, then rather play at Missouri. And I think that's a better style of quarterback for Gus Malzahn. He tried to go with a more NFL, Jarrett Stidham type quarterback. It didn't work. So for running Gus Malzahn's offense, you got to be effective running the ball a la Cam Newton when he was in college. So I think Kelly Bryant will announce later on today for Auburn. It could be Missouri. There is a small chance it could be the Arkansas Razorbacks. The only other two schools that I have seen listed in this are North Carolina, that we've heard he's made multiple visits to, and then I did not realize Mississippi State had gotten in the mix as well. But Kelly Bryant supposed to make his announcement later on today. And then finally, Diesel, did you see you had a long weekend? You went up for the Sun Belt Conference Championship game on Saturday, but did you make it home to your apartment in Malden and by any chance catch the end of the Pittsburgh Steelers-Los Angeles Chargers Sunday night NFL game?
I did not.
I mean, it was a historic breakdown by the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were up somewhere in the neighborhood of 30-14, maybe lost 31-30, whatever it was. But anyway, it was a big comeback by the L.A. Chargers, and they end up winning the game on the game's final play on a field goal. On the first attempt, he misses wide left, but the Pittsburgh Steelers are offside. So guess what? You get in and you move it 5 yards closer, you take another kick. On the second attempt, the Pittsburgh Steelers block the field goal, except for there's some yellow laundry down on the field in which they were offsides yet again. So on the third attempt, the San Diego Chargers nail it. They win. Game's over. Do you know that that third field goal attempt never had to take place? That there is an obscure NFL rule that the officials, after the second consecutive offsides by the Pittsburgh Steelers, could have called the attempt from the San Diego Chargers good because of continually having the same foul over and over again. Apparently, if it happened a third time, that would have had to been done. But the officials, due to the fact it was offsides twice in a row, and you can't blame Pittsburgh trying to sell your soul out to block the kick, but after that second attempt, the game could have ended right there, and the officials award the Los Angeles Chargers the game. After a third attempt, they would have had to do it. Can you imagine the uproar on Twitter Sunday night? Had after that second attempt at the field goal that Pittsburgh blocked, that the officials called that obscure rule and said, hey, it's the L.A. Chargers game. It would have
been How many people would have believed that they just made up a rule?
Oh, it would have been a meltdown of unbelievable proportions. What it is Dean Blandino and Mike Piera. Their officials can call a penalty for continually fouling to stop a team from scoring. Interesting. We'll take your phone calls. It's open phones here in the first hour. David Cloninger from the Charleston Post and Courier at 502. So, Diesel, before we go to Kevin and Delvin on the telephone, Kelvin Benjamin, wide receiver with the Buffalo Bills, was just released. You remember when he was a first-round draft pick of the Carolina Panthers and the go-to wide receiver, and then when he gets traded to Buffalo, he decides to throw Cam Newton under the bus and say it was all Cam Newton's fault? You didn't even make it through the year with the Buffalo Bills. Turns out it may you may want to take a long look in the mirror of why you just got released and it wasn't Cam Newton's fault. All right, Kevin wants to talk college football, followed by Delvin. Kevin, hope you're having a good afternoon.
Yes, sir. How y'all doing this evening?
Man, I don't know. That kind of made me giggle a little bit, because that's why you don't throw people under the bus in the media like Kelvin Benjamin did Cam Newton.
Yes, sir. I just want to talk a little bit on the whole Heisman situation.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like just like you said, that they give the award out in the August, September, October. It's pretty much over and done with. I think that's what cost Deshaun Watson a lot of the Heisman the second year he was in it. Because if you go and look at his playoff stats both years he was in consideration for the Heisman, I don't think there's really a way that you could say he didn't deserve it by his performances in it. But I feel like the Heisman was over in October when everybody was so gung-ho on Tua, which he's a great, great quarterback, great college athlete, without a doubt. But I don't think there was no way that anybody else could catch up to him the way it happened with Lamar Jackson, because he struggled late in that season. What? And I think lost two more games.
So, Kevin, let me ask you, right now everybody has jumped on the Kyler Murray bandwagon where he is the betting favorite for Saturday night. But let me ask you, people, you know, we snowball this stuff. Kyler Murray did not face a single top 25 passing defense all year long. Remember, he plays in the Big 12. They play 7-on-7. Tua Tagovailoa faced three top 15 defense. Kyler Murray faced one top 25 scoring defense in Army, and they put up 21 points and went to overtime. Tua faced four, including number one, Mississippi State. So now everybody wants to go throw it in Kyler Murray because of what happened on Saturday, but you fail to realize that they play no defense in the Big 12. So, you know, to me, it's all what the media wants. That's who they start campaigning for.
I agree with you. I don't think there's no way in the world that you could ever tell me that you could compare Tua and Kyler Murray, because Tua, like you said, everybody knows in the ACC you're going to play elite NFL caliber talent, mm-hmm. without a doubt. And the numbers he put up this year are ridiculous versus playing in the same division as Kyler Murray. Lord only could tell you how much better his stats could be playing a Texas, a Kansas, mm-hmm. you know, them type of teams. So I agree with you 100%. There's nobody in the world that could convince me that if teams traded quarterback, there's no way Kyler Murray puts up them kind of numbers.
Kevin, so I will hold on real quick. I will say this much. If Tua had more stats from the fourth quarter, or if Travis Etienne had more of that 1,200 yards rushing between Lynn J. Dixon, Tavion Feaster, and Adam Joyce, you'd see both of those guys 1-2.
Oh, yeah. I think Etienne, just because he don't get the same amount of workload mm-hmm. as them guys, and, you know, being quarterback, you're – it's hard for a running back to win the Heisman nowadays anyways. But Etienne is probably one of the most talented players in college football.
Yep. Hey, thanks for the phone call, Kevin. That was great. Now, listen, I'm not campaigning for Tua, but here's the deal. He was the favorite, and he sat out four quarters, yet their stats are roughly the same. But you go back and realize – hell yeah, Kyler Murray put up a hell of a lot of stats and 40 points every game, because they don't hit anybody in the Big 12. Delvin's up next, wanting to talk college football. Delvin, hope you're having a good afternoon.
I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
And it's Tuesday all day.
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't want to say, Kelvin Benjamin will find a way, but somehow, some way, he's going to blame Cam Newton. He's going to find a way.
Yep.
He'll find a way. And number two, Sturge, I know you're sitting in the studio. How's he doing? Is he taking it hard, Diesel? Is he okay?
When it came up about Lamar Jackson in Louisville, I saw this little pain look in his eyes. But, you know, now that he's had 24 hours to deal with it, he just wants somebody that's going to come in and love his App State Mountaineers.
I've just been pounding nothing but Kentucky whiskey for the last 24 hours, Delvin, to deal with it.
Would it be a sign if, like, usually a coach takes a staff member on. If one of the coaches get left behind, do you think that's a sign that coach might be the head coach at App State? You think it'll be somebody promoted from in staff?
We were talking about that earlier, Diesel. In staff, you know, that's been the history of App State football.
Right.
Where do you think? Are you hearing any chatter?
There's a handful of candidates that I've heard thrown around. A popular name, I don't know that I would go this direction, but Ruffin McNeil, because he had formerly been on staff at Appalachian State. Dwayne Ledford, who left App State to go be on staff at NC State, is a top candidate. Coach Brown, who's the current defensive coordinator at App State, is on the list. I'm blanking on names.
I didn't hear the Ruffin McNeil name, but I did hear Dwayne Ledford, though, at NC State. I heard his name. I don't believe him as one of the top candidates. You said Ruffin McNeil is probably a top candidate, too?
Yeah, he's been mentioned on a lot of short lists for that job.
Yeah, and Delvin.
Would you think that'd be a good fit for him?
Possibly.
It's definitely a name.
I'm not. The point is, whoever gets this job is going to be handed the keys to a Ferrari because you won a conference championship. You've got, I think this year they were the second or third youngest football team in college football. I think with only seven or eight seniors on the team. So whoever gets this job, just don't mess it up. That's the whole MO. Don't mess this thing up.
I agree with you, D. I think that you got a quarterback come out to Zach Thomas, who nobody didn't know about last year, how he was going to do. He did a great job in his first year as a starter. Like you said, they're a young team. They're going to be part of the favorite to win the Sun Belt next year. And I tell you, that's a sneaky good hire nobody's talking about. I want to get y'all guys' take on that. What do you think about Will Healy going to Charlotte now after Charlotte got spurred by Mike Houston to go to East Carolina? I think that's a sneaky hire.
Yeah, Delvin, I was actually what I was going to mention, that Will Healy, the Austin Peay head coach that's had a lot of success. Remember, they're one of those they're not necessarily non-scholarship, but there are some limitations, and he did well at Austin Peay. And you know what? What about going and looking at somebody that has succeeded at a lower level? Because, you know, somebody told me today, Dabo Swinney, this on Twitter, and I didn't even respond to it because of some things today, said that if Dabo Swinney was the head coach at Tennessee, he wouldn't go 500 in the SEC.
Bull.
And my comment to that is no comment. It is so much BS, because if you can coach, you can coach. And he'd be recruiting.
That's right. Winners win. One of the biggest things a coach has to do is they have to be able to recognize talent. On whatever level it is they're looking for talent, if they can recognize it, that's the hallmark of a good coach. There's a lot of people out there who can understand X's and O's and can break down coverages and this and that. But it's about truly identifying talent. That means both on the recruiting trail and putting quality assistant coaches around you. If you can find those right, that makes the head coach's job much easier. If you can put talented people around you.
Well, Chip Thornton gets in with me on Twitter. Somebody says, easily done in the at Clemson in the ACC. However, I don't believe he would be a top-tier head ball coach in the SEC. And Chip Thornton gets in, definitely not on Rocky Top 500 at best. And that's garbage, because what you're trying to do is say, well, Clemson doesn't play anybody. Well, they've got two wins over Oklahoma, two over Ohio State, one over Alabama, LSU in the last 6 years. If you can do that at Clemson, you can do it at Tennessee. So it's wanting not to give anybody any credit. The fact that somebody could actually believe Dabo Swinney wouldn't be a 500 ball coach at Tennessee, no comment. Get off of Twitter.
Is Clemson under Tommy Bowden that much different from where Tennessee is right now?
Tennessee would probably want to be where Clemson was under Tommy Bowden, because they haven't even been to a bowl game in a few years.
And people are looking at it through the lens of the last 10 years of Dabo Swinney Clemson. Look at it from the lens of where they were before Dabo Swinney.
It's just
compare that Clemson to this Tennessee.
500 at best at Tennessee. I mean, take your Twitter account away. That's not even worthwhile. Hey, let's get Jimmy in. Wants to talk Heisman before you get out to break. Jimmy, hope you're having a good afternoon.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing fantastic.
All right. The Heisman. I think that Dwayne Haskins should win the Heisman. What did he have? 41-plus touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio State didn't have a very good defense this year. he had to put up a lot of big numbers to help them win the game, like that Maryland game. They were down by 14 points, and he brought them back to win by one. Yeah, they lost Purdue, but, man, Purdue was just they had all the momentum in that game for that young man that had that illness. And so, yeah, I'm going to go with Dwayne Haskins, man. And then if I could mention Urban Meyer, I'm glad that he's gone. Michigan fans are going to be glad that he's gone. But you can't take away that he's one of the greatest coaches. Oh, yeah. I won't say anything about his morals and the way he oversees his players, kind of like what happened at Florida with all those guys being arrested. But as far as X's and O's and calling the plays, he's one of the greatest coaches that's been in college football.
I don't disagree at all, Jimmy, and thanks for the phone call because we're up against the break. Listen, any of those three finalists, you can make the case for them, no doubt whatsoever. I don't think it would be disappointing. I'm kind of curious on Kyler Murray if there might be some Oklahoma fatigue in voting for Baker Mayfield last year. We haven't had same Heisman Trophy winners of the Heisman Trophy in back-to-back years from the same school since Doc Blanchard and somebody else did it at Army in like 1945 and 46.
Now, I don't want to jump into this if we're about to talk about it next, but are we going to talk about the playoff?
No, we're going to go segment? Urban Meyer because there was a...
Okay, well, let me go ahead and get into it because you mentioned this and I don't want to get too far away from it and forget. You just talked about Heisman fatigue, and we talked earlier about playoff fatigue in that the makeup of the college football playoff looks so similar year in and year out. And yes, it goes to the point that I made a week and a half ago that the point of the spear of college football is getting that much sharper. It's getting that much pointier. Those three, four, five, six teams at the top, there's an ocean between number six and number seven right now in college football, just generally speaking. And we talked yesterday about expanding the college football playoff, and really what's going to need to happen is the Pac-12, who's getting left out over and over and over again, they're going to have to make a lot of noise, but at the same time, this might be the other thing. This fatigue might be the other thing, and they may just say, look, we need to throw some more teams in there, essentially giving the Alabamas and Clemsons another chance to lose in a playoff.
Well, we'll get into the numbers, but there have been 20 bids given out to the five college football playoffs and only 10 schools represented. But when we come back, Urban Meyer hangs it up at the Ohio State University. Like him or not, you got to respect what he did as a coach. But there are reports that there was an early report of something flying through the air in Michigan. We'll tell you about that as well. So if you've been in a hole all day, Urban Meyer is stepping down as the head coach at Ohio State at the conclusion of this season. He will coach the team against Washington on January 1st in the Rose Bowl. And then the following day, offensive coordinator Ryan Day will take over as head coach of the Ohio State Buckeyes. So, we've claimed all year, ever since it broke down at the Big Ten media days, Ohio State, Urban Meyer would not be roaming the sidelines at Ohio State next year.
Kind of sounds like his stint at Florida and his departure.
How about this? You're dead on. Tell me if this doesn't sound just like his days in Gainesville. Hired, win, scandal, health concerns. Can't you make the same comment about Gainesville and Columbus, Ohio? Hired, win, scandal, health concerns.
It's the exact same order of events.
Now, here's the deal. You can't do this a third time. You know what? This will be the kid that cried wolf too many times. You know what I mean? When asked if he was retiring, he is retiring from The Ohio State University.
Right.
They don't owe him a dime. He is retiring. However, he was asked earlier today, will this be your final coaching job? And he said, quote, unquote, that's a complicated question.
You know, I think Urban Meyer at this point in his career should probably, I would say look to get on a big-time staff as a coordinator somewhere. Take the pressure off. I mean, look, these guys, they have a competitive fire in them, and we all say, well, why don't they just take their millions of dollars and ride off into the sunset and retire? They can't. They get bored. They need something to do. So whether he goes back, I think he'd be bored back in the broadcast booth. So I think that's why he is rife to go on to somebody's staff somewhere. I don't know if Urban Meyer was an offensive coordinator or a defensive guy before, but it makes total sense.
Who the hell would hire Urban Meyer as coordinator? Because every fan in that fan base now realizes you have a national championship coach just one level behind the head coach.
Yeah, maybe he just doesn't want the pressure of that anymore.
How about high school? What about go out there, win football games, help kids get scholarships?
I mean, that's not a bad idea, but is that going to be good enough for
Urban
Meyer?
I don't know, but I'm just sitting here thinking as a head coach, I'm not putting that kind of guy. I don't care if he's 54 years and not. I don't care if he has an 82-9 record in seven seasons at The Ohio State University, including a national title in 2014. I'm not putting him on my staff because, like I said, the first time you struggle, get rid of him. We got Urban Meyer as a coordinator.
I mean, that's a heck of a fallback.
Yeah, it's a nice place to be. But, Diesel, you know how we have when it comes to a coaching search? I don't know how much this will matter with App State's current one, but, you know, the hardcore football fans, I don't want to be anything more insulting than that, that get on, like, the FAA website and start tracking planes. Hey, I see the Auburn planes in Norman, Oklahoma. You know those guys? Was there an early reporting of Santa Claus in Michigan last night? Because Michigan is the biggest benefactor of Urban Meyer's decision. I mean, Jim Harbaugh had to go, I want to commit to the University of Michigan. He is the biggest benefactor of this. I'm talking on the field, in recruiting battles, in every single way. It's not Michigan State. Mark D'Antonio proved he could beat Urban Meyer. Jim Harbaugh has not done it. Meyer owned the Wolverines, beating them seven straight times, including all four times he played Jim Harbaugh. So Michigan State's not the benefactor here. Oh, yeah, what about what's going on at Penn State? No, Jim Harbaugh is the benefactor when it comes to Urban Meyer's decision today. Let's get Connor's opinion on Urban. Connor, hope you're having a good afternoon.
Oh, yeah, man. Thanks. You too. Just a quick comment. You said you wouldn't hire Urban Meyer as a coordinator or something if you wanted to coach your team, but I think that I think a vast majority of Power 5 athletic directors and coaches would probably take Urban Meyer. I don't think it's about morals and what kind of guy he is.
Oh, no. I'm not talking. I'm talking about the fan base would realize you as head coach had a multiple national championship winning coach as the coordinator. As soon as your team plays like crap one day, you need to be fired and let's promote Urban Meyer to head coach. You know what I mean?
There
I'm talking
okay.
The looking over your shoulder situation.
But I think for Urban, that gets him as close as possible to – being at the top again without having to be the man.
What about
he could
pros?
Be the man behind the man. He could be the man behind the power and that behind the throne, and that's fine. Maybe that's enough for him. It gets him close to it, but he doesn't have to go through all the pressure, all the stress of being a head coach.
I'm just and Connor, I'm sorry. I hope you got out there. No, I wasn't being insulting about the man or the morals or anything else. I just know football fans, they want more. They want more. And if you've got that kind of coach as a coordinator, eventually they're going to want him.
It reminds me of that scene from We Are Marshall when Coach Lingle tries to go get the old assistant coach to come back. And he says, they want you to be the head coach. I want you to be my offensive coordinator. He goes, well, coach, that sounds like a demotion. Why would I take that job? He goes, same responsibilities, less pressure, more coverage, less boards.
Maybe at the professional level. But again, here's the deal. In this day of Twitter, the first time you struggle 17-13 as a head coach with Urban Meyer as your offensive coordinator, his time's over. He can't get it done. Let's give it to Urban Meyer. All right, when we come back, we got some more news and notes when it comes to the coaching carousel and a lot of other things. Sounds like Georgia Tech may have found their man. So the coaching carousel's heating up. We know Louisville hired Scott Satterfield from Appalachian State. So that left the Georgia Tech job open, and it sounds like the Yellow Jackets have found their man. It is former Georgia Tech quarterback Ken Wisenant that is the current offensive coordinator of the San Diego Chargers, who only have, what, two losses this year. And apparently he has 48 hours to notify Georgia Tech if he is accepting the job or not. So a lot of people have talked about Tony Elliott in that situation. I think that there's the case that for whatever reason, Georgia Tech decided they wanted a guy with an NFL background. And I don't get that, Diesel, because you look at Urban Meyer, who retired today. Show me his NFL background. You go look at Dabo Swinney. Show me where he's ever been in an NFL background. Now, granted, Nick Saban, you know, he broke into football as a defensive coordinator for the Cleveland Browns under Bill Belichick and, of course, spent 2 years as head coach of the Miami Dolphins, or not quite 2 years with the Miami Dolphins. But is that a prerequisite at Georgia Tech? I don't know, but Ken Wisenant, the San Diego offensive coordinator, apparently has been offered the job. He has 48 hours in which to let Georgia Tech know. Also, sounds like the University of Colorado has found their man. It will be Georgia defensive coordinator Mel Tucker, and he has reached an agreement with Colorado. He has NFL experience. He has experience as a coordinator at a lot of different places as well. I find this to be an interesting hire because I went and looked at his background, Diesel, and I don't really see anything a la the old Big 8 or now the Pac-12. You know what I mean? Mel Tucker's a good coach, but guess what? You're going to have to put a staff together of maybe a few people that you don't really know and trust, because you're going to have some type of recruiting, some type of guys with some kind of recruiting background for that area. You know what I mean? Mel Tucker's been recruiting here in the Southeast the last couple of years. Also, sounds like the University of Maryland is going to offer their job to Bama offensive coordinator Mike Locksley. He spent one stint as a head coach at New Mexico back in the day. Mike Locksley, it was announced earlier today, he is the 2018 winner of the Broyles Award. That is for the nation's top assistant. Also in the group of five for the finalists there was Jeff Scott, the Clemson co-offensive coordinator. Also, Cliff Kingsbury, it was just announced a little while ago, he will be the new offensive coordinator for the Southern Cal Trojans. So a lot of different things kind of speeding up. And Kelly Bryant is still expected to make his announcement tonight when it comes to his new school. Apparently, Missouri and Auburn are the two finalists, and he had a meeting with Gus Malzahn earlier today after it was announced their quarterback, Jared Stidham, was going to go ahead and go pro. All right, Diesel, I'm going to date myself here. What year were you born? I'm trying to think right.
84.
Okay. You won't even understand this one, but maybe you heard your dad talk about it, okay? All of our lives here in the Southeast was made better today in 1975. Do you have any chance, when it's sports related, do you have any idea what could have made every young boy's life better today in 1975, as well as adults across the Southeast?
Don't have a clue.
Ted Turner bought the Atlanta Braves back in 1975. Of course, they ended up being the majority of the meat of the schedule for the first superstation, WTBS, which all of us remember growing up, watching the Cubs on WGN. That was the greatest part of growing up in the 80s. You got to come home from school, and the Cubs were on television because they didn't have lights on Wrigley Field at that point. But no, I think all of our lives were made better today in 1975 when Ted Turner purchased the Atlanta Braves. And, of course, they became a staple on WTBS, the superstation, and ended up winning a World Series under Ted Turner as an owner as well. Maybe the best Ted Turner story of them all. He got so frustrated about a year and a half later And the Braves were terrible until that 1 year run in the 80s with Claudel Washington and Brett Butler and Bruce Benedict and Del Murphy and all those guys. Glenn Hubbard at second base, Bob Horner at third, Rafael Ramirez at shortstop. Let's see, who was also Chris Chambliss at first base. That was fun. But anyway, sorry, stop about going. Back in May 11th, 1977, the Braves were bad, Diesel. Ted Turner said, screw it. I can manage this ball club. I can do as good of a job as any of these morons that I have hired to manage the Atlanta Braves. He actually managed one game, May 11th, 1977, in Major League Baseball, stepped in and said, you can't do that again. So he had to go hire a different manager. But if you are from the South, we have to stop and take a moment and say thank you, Ted Turner, for purchasing the Atlanta Braves today in 1975. Also, Swamp Rabbits Hockey is going to be heard here on WORD tonight at 6:45. It will be our buddy Jordan Coons with Patrick Brown on the play from Charleston, the North Charleston Coliseum. The Greenville Swamp Rabbits taking on the South Carolina Stingrays. Again, pregame 6:45 on our sister station, WORD 106.3 FM, because we've got Clemson Tiger basketball. Clemson hosting St. Peter's. They're 2-5 on the season. But coming up next, South Carolina, they know that they are going to the Belt Bowl in Charlotte to face the Virginia Cavaliers tomorrow at 5 p.m. We will talk to the voice of the Virginia Cavaliers, Dave Kane, about that matchup. But coming up, we're going to be talking with our buddy David Cloninger, the South Carolina Gamecock beat writer for the Charleston Post and Courier, give you a little wrap-up. We know Deebo Samuel will not be playing in the Belt Bowl, but he did end up first-team all-purpose and kick returner, second-team wide receiver on today's SEC selection. So David Cloninger from the Charleston Post and Courier. When we come back, it'll be open phones for the rest of the hour. Gary McDaniel from ClemsonSportsNews.com at the top of the sixth.